Support for this podcast is provided by SHL. From talent acquisition to talent management, SHL has the people insight to help you build a talent strategy that achieves outcomes like increased productivity, internal mobility, engagement, and leadership diversity. SHL brings transparent AI technology, decades of trustworthy data science, and objectivity to help companies attract, develop, and grow the workforce you need to succeed in the digital era. Visit shl.com to learn how you can unlock the full potential of your greatest asset, your people.
There's been more of scientific discovery, more of technical advancement and material progress in your lifetime and mine than in all the ages of history.
Hi everyone, this is Matt Alder. Welcome to episode 253 of the Recruiting Future podcast. With everything that's happened in the last few weeks, just to timestamp this, I'm recording on March the 31st, 2020. There is understandably already a massive amount of content being released and discussion going on about remote working. I wanted to add some value rather than some noise to all of this, so I've invited back one of my former guests to give us a CEO's perspective on remote working. Victor Schmidt is CEO of NetGuru, a company that's always had a remote-first operating model for its employees. We talk about the difference between choosing to work from home and being forced to work from home, and the implications of that for leadership. We also cover motivation, culture, equality of opportunity, and the likely future for remote working. Hi, Victor, and welcome back to the podcast.
Hi, Matt. Hi. Good to hear you again, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, great to have you back on the show. Could you just introduce yourself and tell everyone what you do?
Sure. So I'm Victor Schmidt. I'm the co-founder and one of the co-founders of NetGuru. We are a software consulting and development company. We have a team of 650 people now, and we work with startups and corporates, and we help them build digital products. So it's a service business, and we build software.
Fantastic stuff. So I first spoke to you about a year ago, and we were talking about the fact that NetGuru is a remote first organization. And with everything that's currently coming on, it just seemed very appropriate to get you back on the show and talk a little bit about your considerable experience running a company with remote workers. Before we kind of get into that, what sort of changed in the last year? How have things developed at NetGuru since we last spoke?
Well, I think, you know, with everything that's happening, I think you have to also kind of divide this time frame into, like, you know, the year that was, you know, after we spoke, and then the last 2-3 weeks. And I think, you know, the first part of it, we were able to grow, I would say, quite substantially, continued on our growth path. No real changes in terms of, you know, how we worked. You know, remote first, we have a bunch of folks who were in the office, but we also have people who decided to work from home. And this kind of, yeah, it scaled with our growth very easily, and we were very, very happy with how it's was all coming together. Obviously onboarded some new interesting clients, so, you know, pretty much business as usual. And then obviously the last 2-3 weeks were very, very different, but in some ways, obviously, this and that's, I guess, why we're speaking today. We were probably very well prepared, and I guess you could never be prepared, but, you know, in comparison to some other businesses, I think we're quite lucky that we had this kind of remote mindset from almost the very beginning.
Again, for people who didn't listen to the show that we did last year, let's just kind of start with the sort of basics. So what is a remote first organization? I suppose in the context of before the pandemic situation.
Yeah, so the way we always understood remote first was that our kind of default, whenever working with in teams, and, you know, whenever we're doing in business wise, we always expected people to be available kind of online. So you know, whenever there was a meeting, we would have this meeting on, you know, Zoom, Hangouts, whatever tool you're using. That's where the kind of meeting place is. And then once, if somebody happens to be in the same office or they happen to be in the same room, they would kind of obviously join the meeting together from this room. But we don't have this expectation of people being somewhere physically. So we designed the whole company in a way that allowed almost everybody to be wherever they wanted at any given moment.
Obviously, there's a huge amount of content and discussion around remote working at the moment. And I think one of the most interesting things for me are the people who are pointing out that actually there's a big difference between choosing to work from home and being forced to work from home. What advice would you give to the leaders out there who are finding that pretty much their whole workforce are being forced to work from home? What advice would you give to leaders that can help their people cope with this sort of dramatic and very sudden change?
Well, look, one thing I would like to say for sure is that I think everybody who is now listening to this podcast, or you know, us, you know, kind of, you know, speaking today, I think we are in this. I mean, everybody has been affected by this, but I think we are in this hugely privileged situation to really have this opportunity to be working from you know, from home, and to be working remotely. I think there's, you know, number and a huge number of folks, you know, including doctors and nurses and people in this kind of essential supply chain, and people who are, you know, basically doing things that can just physically cannot be done remotely. And I think, you know, we are talking about the struggles, and you know, we've all probably seen all the memes coming going around about, you know, the struggles of working from home. But I think this is really like, in some way, almost like a first world problem in a way that I think we really have to have this perspective that we are hugely privileged that we are able to kind of do most of the stuff that we do from home. And I think in this context, you know, the thing that really struck me, you know, in the last 2-3 weeks was that how quickly and how you know, just pretty much the whole world and a lot of people who traditionally were just really against and they did not have this mindset were forced and then able to do so many of those things that they felt impossible to do remote, to actually do that remote. And I have, you know, a few examples from my you know, personal life, like, you know, folks, like if things like, you know, just signing some small contracts or you know, setting up some things that were just really, everybody always wanted to do in person. Now obviously nobody wants to do it in person, and we figure out a way, like, you know, with homeschooling, with education that's happening for in a lot of countries now online. I think it's if there is a thing that, you know, especially at this moment in time where we say, you know, there are some advantages and then there are some, you know, silver linings in this, is that how quickly those things can change. But then again, obviously, like you said, you know, a lot of people who do struggle with it, and I think there are some strategies and tactics that you can take. But for me personally, this is something that was super easy for us because of the culture and the mindset. And I think whenever we, you know, before this crisis, whenever we were talking about, you know, how to transition the company into being more remote, we always said, hey, you know, you have to start with the culture. You have to start with, you know, figuring out, you know, what kind of mindset do you have as a leader, and what kind of mindset do people have on your team, and how can you change and evolve this mindset, usually, like, you know, slowly and gradually, into something that would allow you to be very, very productive in this kind of remote environment. Obviously, now it's quite hard to do it, you know, in an evolutionary manner. we all had to go through a revolution right now, so it's rough, and people are, you know, slowly getting used to it. But I think they have to be, yeah, just basically we have no choice.
I suppose digging deeper into that culture thing, you know, you talked about that you created a culture that kind of really worked remotely. How, you know, thinking that this is going to go on for some time, we'll talk about the future a little bit, or the likely future a little bit later. How can people maintain their culture remotely, or build a different culture remotely? What would your advice be?
So I think one thing that I would definitely point out as this kind of a foundation of being able to work remotely in a way that's kind of productive and that's not causing, I guess, stress to all parties involved, is that I think in, and this really works in, even if you're not working remotely, but I think this remote work adds additional layer of complexity if you don't kind of have this, is trust. And I've been talking about trust kind of a lot, I think, but the component of really trusting your team to do their job and to do their work in a way that's the best possible way they can do that without having a constant control, this is the key to being able to work remotely in a productive way. And I think it's also the key to being, you know, the most productive and the best possible team even outside of this concept of being remote. But it's huge, like, this is even more crucial when we don't have this, you know, direct supervision and direct control of you know, whatever people are doing when they're at home, you know, in front of their computers. And I think I've seen a few of those, you know, kind of stories where with this rapid transition, people are, one of the first thing that comes to mind for some leaders is like, okay, so how can I now have this piece of software that will then, you know, help me figure out what are people doing in a single moment in time when they're working from home? And that's, I think, and you know, it's obviously, it's pretty, I think, you know, it's quite easy to say that's probably not the right approach. But the underlying reason for that, obviously, is the lack of trust. So I would say, if you are looking to, if there is something you have to catch up on, if you haven't been, you know, paying too much attention, is trusting your people. So now, you really have to step up your game in this and figure out how you can make sure that you work as a team without having to be, you know, directly supervising everybody at a given moment. I think this would be like the key message I would have.
Absolutely, that makes perfect sense. And I suppose, again, leading on from that, what about motivation? I suppose we can sort of talk about the, you know, your experience of doing this in the past. How do you keep a remote team or remote workforce motivated and productive?
Sure. So I think, you know, for me, always when I talk about, you know, this kind of digital leadership, if you will, like, you know, how do you basically lead the teams and lead the companies and businesses in this, you know, sometimes hybrid environment and sometimes, you know, purely remote environments, I always say that it's the same strategies. So if you look at all the, you know, management books that have been written over the last, or leadership books that have been written over the last, you know, years, and you look at the strategies that people are talking about, they're the same. But what's changed is the tactics and the tools. So, you know, people say, hey, you should be probably doing, you know, the some of the tools that people were using in the, you know, pre-remote only kind of environment are like daily stand-ups and having some kind of a weekly catch-up and one-on-one with your team. So all those things you can do. Sometimes you can also do them even more productively remotely. But a lot of people in the past would struggle to do that because of the, you know, just kind of, especially like 10 years ago, I think some of the tools that we had available to do video conferencing or to do, you know, proper real-time communication were just not as good as they are today. So today we have all the tools to be able to do pretty much everything that we should be able to do sitting in the same room, but do it over, again, Zoom or Hangouts. So we would do, you know, daily stand-ups. We would do things like, you know, kind of a weekly catch-up course or weekly one-on-ones. And then kind of a layer on top of it, something that I think is pretty strange, I guess, in the beginning. And I think it again, like 3-4 weeks ago, if we said, and we've done this before as well, like, but if we were talking about this, some time ago, people said, this is super weird. Like, this is weird. Now I think everybody's like, I think I should try this. Is how can you also move some of those informal and social interactions in this kind of a virtual and remote space. So, you see this those stories coming out about, people just, scheduling their dinners and their drinks with their friends over Zoom call. And it sounds bizarre, but I think it's just the new reality in some ways. But what we've done in the past in a smaller scale, and we've now done, on a much larger scale, is pretty much to do the same thing for this kind of a business social occasions, which is like, for example, people who are eating lunch together, at a certain moment in time as a team, in front of their video call. So those are the things that you can kind of put in there. That, it's obviously not the same, but it's something that you can help bring in some sanity into the situation and create this human connection and not kind of become this remote caveman. I think, again, a lot of us have seen those memes about the remote work where people are going into this kind of a caveman mode without shaving, without doing anything, just because they're staying, at home. So to be able to counter this risk, I think there's a lot of ideas. And this is really something where you have to be creative. Like we have somebody from our team who is doing every morning, she sets up a kind of webinar session for stretching. So she will do like a stretching session at 8 a.m. Anybody from the team can join on a call, and she'll just basically like run a small fitness stretching session for whoever wants to join. So that's one of those things that I think creates this additional layer of kind of human connection and sanity. And one more thing I would add that I think is super interesting change, and also I think brings in this kind of a human part of what you're doing that was traditionally very much hidden in this kind of a remote environment. So whoever was on the video call, you always tried to be as professional as possible. And I think we still all want to do that, but we just realized that with a lot of people having their kids at home, it just becomes impossible. And we see so many of our internal and also our client calls where we basically have kids, running in and just joining the call randomly or screaming from the other room or doing something that I think in the past would cause a lot of embarrassment. And, again, I think this is the famous CNN video with the kids running in on the guy who was on the call with live on live TV, which was like a huge weird and a famous thing in the past. Now it's basically like an everyday situation for most people working from home. And on the one hand, it's like kind of it's a strange thing, but I think it's also a good thing because it kind of again brings in this humanity back into this kind of a techno world of remote work.
Absolutely. And I'm kind of at the stage where I'm thinking I'll just make my 4-year-old the co-host of this podcast because I'm getting so many interruptions. The final question, as I said, it's impossible to sort of predict the future. But one of the things that we talked about on the podcast last time was equality of opportunity between remote workers and office workers. As this situation plays out and presumably people go back to offices and, maybe there will be an increase in remote working, do you think we'll finally see that equality of opportunity between remote workers and people who are working together in a physical space?
Yeah, I think it is hard to predict. I think it's that you will definitely see at least a part of this what we see today to survive, after the crisis. So I think a lot of people who are, completely against this will now say, hey, okay, well, actually, maybe we should, you know, consider it more. And then people who are like, you know, somewhere on the fence, they'll say, yeah, this is totally working. Like, we should totally do that. So I think there is going to be like a movement into this right direction. I think with a lot of things I've seen, you know, even not on the kind of remote spectrum, but also like on the part of basically a digital world. So, you know, a lot of companies who thought that they still have like 10 years to really do this slow and evolutionary transition into digital. Now they think, oh, well, actually we need to digitalize much, much faster. So I think this could be similar with remote work. So like people who are like, okay, well, it's probably the future, but like, let's not rush it. We'll get there when we get there. Now they will realize, well, I think the window of opportunity and the change pace is going to be much faster. So this is one thing I would say. But I think something that's, I would say, much more important from the kind of HR perspective is that, and this is something somebody said to me, or I read it somewhere, and it really stayed with me. And I feel like this is something that's going to definitely happen, is that, you know, whenever there's a, in the recruitment process, you have a conversation with a candidate, and you get to this moment where you say, hey, you know, do you have any questions for us? Like, what do you want to know about the company? What do you want to know about the organization? And I think one of the big questions for a lot of people is going to be, how did you handle this crisis? How what kind of steps did you take, and how did you treat your employees? How did you treat your people in this time of crisis? And I think a lot of people will going to make their decisions on whenever to join the organization or not with this in mind. So I think this is one of the things that I really think about a lot when we think about how are we going to deal with this crisis, is that we have to have this lens, is that this is really a time of, you know, like a time of really like something where you have to make good decisions, and it's not going to be easy decisions, and it's really hard right now to say what's the right decision. But it's an important one for sure.
Victor, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me.
My thanks to Victor. You can subscribe to this podcast in Apple Podcasts or via your podcasting app of choice. Please also follow us on Instagram. You can find the show by searching for Recruiting Future. If you're a Spotify or Pandora user, you can also listen to the show there. You can find all the past episodes at www.recruitingfuture.com. On that site, you can subscribe to the mailing list and find out more about working with me. Thanks very much for listening. I'll be back next time, and I hope you'll join me.
This is my show.
Welcome, change agents, to your go-to place for stories that ignite your spirit, fuel your purpose, and connect us all. We believe in the incredible power of the human spirit, its boundless resilience, and the inspiration it brings to our lives. On the Driving Change podcast, we'll journey together through the extraordinary yet very relatable experiences of some of the most amazing people on earth. Our mission? That through these stories, we might just spark change within you and awaken a newfound motivation to harness your unique gifts to make a real difference in the world. So get ready to be inspired and join us on this incredible adventure. You can find the Driving Change podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you love listening to your favorite podcasts.